It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 367, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. First up on the show, Emory Hunt of The Athletic joins us for, I think, the third year in a row to talk about the NFL prospects of Sione Takitaki and his surprising take on Tanner Mangum. Then, is the world coming to an end? Adam does the rest of the show by himself. Now I'm talking about myself in the third person. Classic. Not discuss, because there's no discussing. I just talk about by myself. And this is like the worst open ever. Corbin Cafusi, Mark Pope's staff, Jake Toulson, movies, and more. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Join the conversation with us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to Emory Hunt and I talk right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout podcast, Emory Hunt, the founder of Football Game Plan, also a member of the Pro Football Writers Association, several other associations, and a former college athlete and an announcer and a writer for The Athletic. Am I missing anything, Emory?
Since the last time we talked, I also added instructor to my list of duties. I teach a sports broadcasting class as well.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. That's great. That's great. Well, all of those things are fascinating, but we're only here to talk about the NFL draft because we've had you on a couple years in a row and really enjoyed your analysis. And so we'll start off with BYU's biggest player for this year's draft, of course, is linebacker Sione Takitaki. Performed pretty well in some of the postseason games, did well at the Combine, seems to be getting some buzz as you read some of the draft information coming through. Emory, I was curious on your take from Takitaki. Where do you see him fitting in the NFL, and also where do you think he might end up this year in the draft as far as, you know, what round?
I like what he brings to the table. I was at both the Shrine Game and Senior Bowl where he played in both games, and it was at the Shrine Game where you notice him consistently there at practice, making plays, making tackles in team drills, and seven on seven drills in the passing game. So it's like, you know, this guy just consistently pops. And one thing that's impressive about his game, he's your classic, I hate the stereotype of program, but he's your classic BYU run and chase backer, similar to what we saw a few years ago to Fred Warner. Guys that just are able to get from point A to point B. And you can see them theoretically playing anywhere across the second level. You can see him as a weak side backer, a Mike backer in a nickel situation, or even a Sam backer covering tight ends and perhaps providing pressure on a quarterback. So I thought he had a really good all-star week, both in Tampa and also in Mobile. Then when I got a chance to watch the film in February, it just checked out to what I saw during those two practices, during those two all-star sessions. And I'm a big fan of his game. I think he's one of the more underrated players in this draft class at the second level. And I think if we're talking draft projection, he's probably you're looking at maybe a fifth or sixth round pick.
Yeah. Now you mentioned something about, you know, programs. So over the last few years, BYU's put several linebackers into the NFL. Kyle Van Noy, obviously. Super Bowl champion Fred Warner, that you mentioned, had a really good year last year. Made an impact for San Francisco. Does that, for scouts, does that change how a player is evaluated, the program they came out of, and that some of these guys have succeeded, or do scouts separate that and say, you know, the film doesn't lie, it doesn't really matter that Fred Warner and Kyle Van Noy played in the same program, we're going to look at Takitaki just basically on what we see from him?
I think all of that kind of matters. For me, I can say that, okay, if I know a program has pumped out linebackers over the last couple of draft cycles, I would want to see who's a linebacker coach there, and has he been there for a while? So, for instance, if you're looking at defensive linemen during the time coming out of Penn State, you know that Larry Johnson was the defensive line coach there. Now Larry Johnson is the D-line coach at Ohio State. So you know what type of guy you're getting from a technique standpoint, from how Larry Johnson coaches. So you look at BYU, if they have the same linebacker coach, scouts would feel more comfortable going there. Plus, if they're watching one guy like Kyle Van Noy and he's popping on film, then you tend to notice the other guy that's also popping on film as well. Then you say, okay, this guy is a sophomore. Let me, you know, put him down in my notes as a guy to watch, you know, a couple of years from now. And that's how it usually goes. But it starts from the tape and what you watch on film. And if a guy is popping out there consistently, you want to earmark him for another class. But it also helps that if they have the same, you know, position coach that's there, that's teaching those guys, and you see what you love about the prospect, whether it be from a technical standpoint to how he finishes, to his variety of moves. If it's a pass rusher, you say, wow, this guy's getting well coached. He doesn't make many mental mistakes, and that's a testament to the coaching. And you know, okay, if I get a linebacker or a pass rusher or a receiver from here, I know exactly the type of player I'm getting.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. So getting back to Taki Taki, you know, when Kyle Van Noy was drafted several years ago by the Detroit Lions, had an okay rookie year, then had some injuries, and then found his way back on the depth chart, gets traded to New England, and within pretty short order, the staff there figures out what to do with him, and he's now been a starter on a couple of Super Bowl teams. My question for you is, this is related to Taki Taki, what kind of, you know, obviously didn't work out for Van Noy in Detroit, and then different coaching staff figured out how to best utilize his talents. What kind of system do you think Taki Taki best fits in, where he would have the most chances of success and sticking as an NFL player?
I think he's best suited as he can be a nickel backer in a 4-2-5, or he can, you know, be your standard weak side linebacker in a 4-3. If you're going to go 3-4, he could play on the inside as well. So I think he's versatile. I think he's a see it, go get it type of a backer. I love how he takes great pursuit angles to the ball. He doesn't take false steps. You know, coverage wise, he's solid, and that's an area where he's going to have to get better and improve at the next level. But from a run defense standpoint and from a matching up athletically perspective, he definitely checks all those boxes.
Yeah. Well, switching positions here, another player at BYU is Tanner Mangum, who's out of the program now. He had a strange career at BYU. Started as a freshman, had a really good freshman year, had some moments since then, but spent time battling for the position, and that got beat out by freshman Zach Wilson this past year. But he is, you know, had a good pro day at BYU and seems to have generated some interest, Emery. So I'm just curious on your take. You know, obviously he kind of bounced in and out of the starting lineup, battled some injuries and different things. But what's your take on Tanner Mangum and whether he could potentially draw some interest from NFL teams?
You know, you hit the nail on the head. He had a really interesting career. He burst onto the scene initially as a freshman, 23 touchdown passes, you know, came in, had the upset against Nebraska. He looked real good, man. And when you look at the way it all ended for him, I thought he played real well this year against Arizona. But in between that, it was, like you said, the injuries, the inconsistencies. And in between all that, he lost his confidence. And that's why you didn't see the same Tanner Mangum we saw, you know, earlier in his career. Fast forward to the Tropical Bowl. I was on the broadcast for the Tropical Bowl, and I absolutely became a fan of the person, talking with him, had an interview with him, but also how he practiced that week. I thought, okay, this guy can throw well on the move. He has some accuracy. He's a good athlete. He's able to hit the short to intermediate passes real well, hit guys in stride, was accurate there. I was like, okay, I can see this guy in a West Coast timing-based offense, and he has some potential as a QB2. He's battle-tested. You know, we just talked about what he went through throughout the course of his career, and I think he's in a good place now mentally, which then helps you get back to playing the way you've played earlier in your career and playing your best. And I think his best football is ahead of him. You saw how great of a pro day he had. I know that's against air, but he went out there and did what he had to do. And, you know, the teams in the NFL love a guy that has gone through some adversity. And I think no one has gone through more adversity than Tanner Mangum.
Yeah, for sure. It's strange, you know, came out as a top prospect out of high school too. Had a very strange deal. Where would he need to land? Not specific teams, but what kind of situation do you think would make, you mentioned West Coast offense, but what other factors might make a case for him to be successful and potentially stick in the NFL? I mean, there are not a ton of quarterbacks that end their college career on the bench. who end up, you know, making much of an impact at the NFL. What would help him in that case?
I think when you look at, you know, teams like San Francisco that move their quarterbacks a lot, you look at Atlanta, it could be a good spot for him. Detroit could be another good spot. I just like the fact that, you know, he's a guy that gives you that added dimension of being able to move your passing game left to right on boots and waggles. And I think for him, it's all about how well he's able to get acclimated to the offense, have success on minimal reps, you know, during preseason, and being able to show enough to stick. And I do believe because he's a mature guy, married guy, going through a lot of adversity at BYU, has had some success on field and is, you know, having success in the pre-draft lead up, you know, with the All-Star game at the Tropical Bowl and also at his pro day. He has a lot of good things going for him, and I want to see him. I'm rooting for the guy. I want to see him do well because I think he's a really good story of how to persevere.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's stick with that quarterback class. Obviously, there's the two names at the top are Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins, who, you know, depending on whose board you look at, it seems to be one or two, depending on who you're looking at. If you had that first pick in the NFL draft, are you going to use it on either of those two quarterbacks? Do they fit the mold for you of that you know, franchise type quarterback, franchise changing quarterback?
To me, Dwayne Haskins is the best quarterback in his draft class, and he would have been the best quarterback in last year's draft class, in my opinion. You talk about what he brings to the table from an accuracy standpoint, placement standpoint, decision making, and being decisive when he throws the football. He has a unique ability to, you know, when you're sitting there watching him throw, you just have the feeling that every pass that leaves his hand is a completion. That's just how confident it looks when he throws it. And you talk about a guy 1 year starting, 50 touchdown passes, 8 interceptions. He's making a lot of great decisions with the football in the biggest of games against the biggest opponents and the best defenses. He thrived, 14 touchdowns to only 1 interception. He tore up Washington's defense. They're going to have 6 guys drafted off that defense in the Rose Bowl. He tore up Northwestern's defense, which is a real tough pass defense, especially within the back seven. In the Big Ten championship game, lit those guys up for 5 or 6 touchdowns, I believe. And he also blitzed Michigan, who was the top pass defense in the country, lit those guys up for 5 touchdowns as well. So there's a lot to like about Haskins. He fits the prototype of what the league wants at the position. That's why I just find it comical that he's not being talked about as the premier option in this class. There should be multiple teams that want to find a way to get up in the draft to take him.
Yeah, for sure. I was always very impressed with him and watching him. Kyler Murray obviously is the name that people are talking about. Potentially could be that first name called. Now, I'd be interested in your take. They had, you know, several months ago now, Charlie Casserly on NFL Network. I didn't roast him. I mean, he was just reporting on comments that he said sources had told him about his leadership, about his you know, his skills in the classroom, if you will, meaning the football classroom. How do you draft Kyler Murray, and would the comments of Charlie Casserly or what teams are evaluating, how could that affect if he doesn't go first? Could you see him dropping quite a ways?
I like Kyler Murray as well, so I can see someone taking him if he doesn't go number one to Arizona. It wouldn't surprise me to see someone try to jump ahead of the Giants, you know, or maybe the Giants take Kyler Murray. I think if they have, it would be an ideal situation for them to have both Murray and Haskins on the board at pick 6. It gives them a lot of options and a lot of flexibility to see what they want to do at that selection. So I think he's a really good quarterback. He would have been my third quarterback in last year's draft behind, if you were combining classes, he would have been behind Dwayne Haskins and also Lamar Jackson. So I like his game. I like what he put on the field at, you know, the 1 season at Oklahoma, and I think he's going to have a fantastic career.
Yeah, so let's go back to last year, because last year you talked up Lamar Jackson quite a bit, and were down on some of the, not down, I shouldn't say, but maybe had some of the other guys that went earlier. You know, you had them a little lower than where I think they ended up going in the draft. Did anybody's performance last year surprise you or disappoint you? out of last year's quarterback class?
I was more disappointed in how lethargic Josh Rosen looked. You know, I knew Josh Allen was going to do what he did and, you know, be inconsistent and not really be an accurate passer. He did that in college. Pretty much knew Rosen was going, Darnold was going to have the turnover issues. He led the nation in turnovers in college, so I wasn't surprised there. And Baker Mayfield was one that I was worried about versus pressure. And we saw him early on in the season eat some sacks and fumble the ball a lot. Then, you know, started to have turnovers when teams blitzed him. So, you know, he was able to play well in spurts, but still had some of those issues. And all of those issues I saw from them was what I saw on tape in college. But Rosen, you know, I thought Rosen would have been a little bit better than he showed out there. He looked as if he was a freshman in college, let alone a rookie in the NFL, which, you know, that's not how you want to look. Even a guy like Josh Allen, who's not as talented of a passer as Rosen, from an accuracy standpoint, from an IQ standpoint, he struggled statistically. But when you watch Josh Allen play, you could tell he actually cares about playing the game and had a certain, you know, it about him that, you know, okay, yeah, I'm 9 for 40, but I'm still going to throw up this 41st pass, you know, and you like that about him. You like that he competes. I just didn't see enough of that from Josh Rosen.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, we'll get you out on this last question, which I ask you every year, and you've nailed it so far. I think this is our third or fourth year having you on, because you know you had Dak Prescott a couple of years ago as a quarterback sleeper, and some NFL teams probably wish they had paid attention to that. Who in this quarterback class who's not being talked about or as much do you think could be, besides obviously Murray and Haskins, who could make a big impact in the NFL? Anybody else in this class you think could be a sleeper, if you will?
I'll give you a deep sleeper. I'm going to go to South Dakota State and Taron Christian. You watched him throughout the course of his career compete week in, week out in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, the toughest conference in the FCS with North Dakota State. He's competed with those guys head-to-head. And last year you saw him lose Jake Winicky, who's with the Vikings, and Dallas Goedert, who went to the Philadelphia Eagles. And he put together his best season statistically, 32 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, over 60% completion percentage. And this is his third consecutive year of having those type of numbers. He's a 3-time finalist for the Walter Payton Award, which is the FCS Heisman Trophy. He led the Jackrabbits this year, a young team, to the playoffs. He knocked off top 4 ranked Kennesaw State on the road. Nearly knocked off North Dakota State, but he had a concussion early in that game, and that's why they ended up losing that one. And down to the College Gridiron Showcase, I spoke specifically to two teams as scouts, and they said they were down there specifically to watch Taron Christian, who was the best quarterback in attendance, and he definitely played up to that week. He's 6'2", 225, and it's funny you brought up Dak Prescott. That's why I compared his game to. He ran a 4.49 at the pro day. He checks all the boxes from a leadership standpoint. He was also a finalist for the Campbell Award, which is the academic Heisman Trophy. So he was out here in New York City back in December. So clean-cut kid, really good prospect, checks all the boxes, got the leadership that you want. He's a gamer. I think someone's going to draft him in the late rounds, or maybe he goes undrafted, but he's going to be the type of guy that can thrive and star in the preseason to where he's going to make a roster, be the quarterback, the backup quarterback, and find his way into a starting role and never look back.
All right. I have to say, you got me again, Emery, because that was not the name I thought you were going to say, so that's awesome. Well, and we'll see if he ends up going anywhere. I've got a few friends that are Jackrabbit fans, so they probably agree with you on there for sure. Well, Emery, thank you again for joining us. We'll point everybody, of course, to Football Game Plan and your work at The Athletic as well. And we'll, I'm sure, have you on again. If not before, we'll have you on again next year around this time.
Well, I appreciate you anytime, man.
Well, this is going to be a strange show because there's no Matt. There's just going to be Adam. And I don't, quite honestly, have no idea if this is going to work or not. Or if you guys are going to be like, yeah, I don't know if Adam was our favorite part of the show. I think it might have been Matt. Or potentially it's, I always get confused whose voice was whose, so maybe this works, because you can just, or I can argue with myself and almost sound like Matt. But anyway, we're going to do this. You, of course, just heard my interview with Emory Hunt on the draft. We'll talk a little bit about the draft, but let me start off with a tweet bag question. Tweet bag! See, I'm not as good as Matt at that. From Gary Payne, that's at phrase FastBreakGP. You can tweet at us, of course, at BYU underscore Rishop. He says, Shazam versus Captain Marvel. I think DC won this battle. And of course, our resident movie expert and critic, Andre Hutchins, was quick to echo his comments. Now, I saw both the movies. Matt and I actually saw Captain Marvel together, and we shared some thoughts about that a few weeks ago. And I saw Shazam as well. I have to say, I think they're about the same. I think they're both good but not great superhero movies. I thought, and I realize I am in disagreement with the critics and fans. If you look at things like Rotten Tomatoes on this one, as Shazam was reviewed maybe a little bit better by both critics and fans, I thought the movies were pretty comparable. Not like they're the same, but just as level of my enjoyment. I don't think either of them were great. I think, I'm not sure I didn't enjoy Aquaman better than Shazam. Aquaman was a lot of fun and those things, and Shazam was a little darker than I had anticipated it being. And I thought, Zachary Levi was amazing in that role, but some of the other stuff was just okay. As opposed to Captain Marvel, I thought Brie Larson was just okay, whereas other things were better. But I don't think either of them are great. I just, with my daughter, rewatched not all of the MCU movies, but a bunch in anticipation of Endgame. And I'll tell you what, I'll take most of the movies we watched over either of those two movies any day. Black Panther, Infinity War, depending on how Endgame goes, because it almost feels like there's going to be one 5-hour-long movie. Thor Ragnarok, I'd take over either of those two movies if I had to, pick to go to a desert island. So anyway, on Facebook, and you want to join the conversation on Facebook, it's facebook.com/riseandshout. Randy Whittle asks, greater anticipation this year for Avengers Endgame or Star Wars Rise of Skywalker? Plus, what were your thoughts on the new Star Wars trailer? The greater anticipation for me is Endgame. Number one, it's closer. I mean, I'm going to see it this weekend, and we can talk about it on next week's show. But the other part is, Last Jedi to me was a good movie. I enjoyed The Last Jedi. Sorry, Andre, I did. I just don't think it was a great movie. And this new trilogy to me so far is just okay. I love Star Wars, and always have. But Endgame to me, Infinity War was so good and set all this up that the anticipation level has to be there. As far as the trailer goes, I love the trailer. I thought it was great. I thought, Rey doing some force jump with a TIE fighter. I thought, I don't know about the Emperor laughing at the end, to be honest. Part of me is excited about that, and part of me is worried that they're just going to go back to the well and do all the same things again. But I don't know. I like The Force Awakens better than The Last Jedi anyway, so I'm pleased to have Abrams back in charge. So anyway, now we're done talking movies. Let's go to the Cougars in the news. Yeah, so I brought Matt's voice in for that because there's no way I'm doing the Cougars in the News thing. That seems almost sacrilegious, really. First up is Tyson Williams has signed with the BYU Cougars. Of course, he most recently played at South Carolina. Before that, at North Carolina, he's another grad transfer running back. And we have a tweet bag question from Wade Hillam on Facebook. Wade says, "Is anyone else super happy about Tyson Williams decided to come to Provo. After seeing the spring game and even after the USUPA transfer, I was still skeptical about the running backs. This dude on film looks like the real deal. Feeling much better about the running backs this year." I felt when the soup transfer happened. I said this. Matt was super excited. He thought he'd be our feature back. I did not. I thought he was depth, but happy to have him because the running back position needed depth. I think Tyson Williams could be the starting running back. I think he's as talented, potentially more talented than who we have on the roster. And so I am super happy then, Wade. I will agree with your super happiness on that. Very excited about it. Also, from the Cougars in the news front, obviously the NFL draft is happening this week. The Deseret News had a piece about seven NFL mock drafts, some of which I had never heard of before, and where local players were going. I don't care about the other players from Utah State or Utah, so we're not going to talk about those. But I'm going to talk about Sione Taketake and Corbin Kaufusi. So I'm going to go through each of them and then talk about it overall. NFL.com, one of their mock drafts, had him going round 6, number 206, to Washington. The Athletic had him as a restricted free agent. I think they're full of crap at this point. With as much buzz as going on with Taketake, I'm going to be shocked if he's not drafted. RJ White of CBS Sports had him in round 7, pick 249, to the Arizona Cardinals. RJ's compatriot at CBS Sports, Ryan Wilson, had him number 4, pick number 111, to the Detroit Lions. I hope not. DraftWire had him in number round 6, pick 174, to the Arizona Cardinals again. DraftSite had him as a rookie free agent. I've never even heard of DraftSite. DraftTech, also never heard of it. Round 7, number 235, to the Oakland Raiders. Overall, I think Kaufusi, earlier on in the show, Emery had him pegged at that 5-6 thing. I think he goes a little earlier than that. I think he's a fourth round guy. I think there's been enough buzz, and I think a couple of teams are going to say, well, if we wait till the fifth round, we're probably going to, or sixth round, we're going to miss him. Corbin Kaufusi, so the first five, NFL.com, The Athletic, both the CBS Sports guys and DraftWire did not have him getting drafted and being a rookie free agent. DraftSite had him at the fifth round, pick number 145, to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and DraftTech had him in the fourth round, pick 127, to the Philadelphia Eagles. I think had Corbin Kaufusi been healthy for the NFL Combine and all the off-season stuff, that he would likely get drafted. I think he is not likely to get drafted, but I won't be shocked if somebody decides to do that. I mean, he's got freakish athleticism. He, I think, really improved over his time at BYU, and I think somebody's going to look at his freakish athleticism on tape. And heck, he played on the basketball team, all those things, and somebody's going to think they can turn him into something at the NFL level, right? Turn him into a starter or a key contributor at the NFL level. So anyway, that's the Cougars in the news. I wanted to mention, we haven't mentioned it in a couple of weeks, but we have a Patreon page. You can go to patreon.com/riseandshout, and you can become a patron. Support the podcast. We never ask for anything. We've got a couple cool things before the season that will come out, I think, for our patrons. So stay tuned for that. But if you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/riseandshout. We're going to go deep dive. So our deep dive topic today is Mark Pope's Cougars, right? And what the team's going to look like. A couple weeks ago when we last had our podcast, Mark Pope had been hired. And now I'm going to briefly talk about some of the things that have happened since then. So the first one is a question from Gary Payne, continuing from earlier. Mark Pope says he's going international. What are the chances of success with this approach? How long of a lead time does this need? 1 to 2 years, 3 to 5, or even 5 to 8? Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. I think the lead time's probably 3 to 5 before you see consistent returns, but you can go out there and find somebody now, right, who's not getting recruited or maybe is getting recruited and is being eyed by a lesser school to BYU. I think the international piece, we're going to have the same issues that BYU always has, which is getting someone to understand the culture on campus and what the honor code means and how they're actually going to navigate that. That does not change, but what may change is that some prospect outside of the United States, who, if they'd grown up in the U.S. high school system, would say, "No way, I'm doing that, and I can get a better offer." We may find that, and obviously BYU has had a few international guys in the past, going all the way to Kosic and Rafael Araujo and a few others over the time period. I don't know that this is going to be the basis of his success, Pope's success, and the Cougars' success going forward. But if you can have one to three of these international guys on your roster every year, as we've seen in the rest of the West Coast Conference, they can really add something to it, and you may be competing not against some of the schools that would win in a recruiting battle here in the United States. And then Gary then followed up with another question after this news broke. Sweet. Now you can comment on Jake Toulson, zero to Ainge excitement level on this. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Can I say Toulson level excited? Is that too much of a cop out? Probably. I'm excited actually about his return. Obviously the WAC Offensive Player of the Year. He can score, he can shoot, he can do a few things with his length. He did not have a great start to his career at BYU, but really found his rhythm in Pope's offense at Utah Valley. So I'm excited, and quite frankly, we've got lots of holes, and we're going to talk about that now. The aforementioned Andre Hutchins, he tweeted at us at AC underscore Hutchins is his handle. With the departure of Childs and a couple of transfers from the basketball team, what are BYU's greatest position needs going into next season? And in 5 years, who's still coaching at the respective schools, Pope or Madsen? Hashtag climb on in. The first question, what is the greatest need? I'm going to say bigs because we lost Childs and we still have some good guards on the team, even with Cannon's departure and Hartnett's departure and Bergeson's departure from the perimeter. I'm going to say the interior is where the biggest needs are. I think, unfortunately, Toulson does not solve that. He's another perimeter guy, and you may just be next year a highly perimeter-focused team, right? I think there is a going to be a depth issue there in the middle of the court, and I think there is a I don't know. I think that's going to be a weakness this next year. We'll see how the roster ends up panning out over the summer, and if there are any other additions or anything else that comes. But if you look at the forwards that were on the roster last year, obviously Baxter showed a ton of potential. Childs is gone. Colby Lee, I don't see huge there. Dalton Nixon, Luke Worthington, of course, we've already talked about his departure and all those things. So I think that's where it's on the post, and we really, I think Pope really needed Childs to come back to the team next year. So in that news, obviously Pope hired Cody Fugger, Chris Burgess, and Nick Robinson to serve as his assistants for this upcoming season. The first two, Burgess and Fugger, were assistant coaches with him at Utah Valley, and then Nick Robinson was not. So let's talk a little bit about, we had talked about potential staff members. And Fugger and Burgess came up, and Burgess is a fascinating story, obviously because of his failed recruitment to BYU, then to Duke, then transferring to Utah. And so it'll be interesting. Probably most fans sitting in the Marriott Center at this point don't even remember the recruitment story of Chris Burgess, so I don't know that it's going to really be there. Cody Fugger obviously was a coach with him at Utah Valley, and I think he helped, at least is given credit by Pope in helping turn Jake Toulson into that, and also you know, working with other guards there at Utah Valley. And Burgess was more given credit for the development of their big men. You know, Fugger is not new. He worked at BYU, of course, previously Utah State, UC Riverside, Louisiana Tech, and Utah. You know, so you know, I think he's obviously been around, and I think it's a good hire. Burgess, same thing. I think it's a really good hire as well. The one that's that is maybe a little bit more interesting and a little bit more unknown is Nick Robinson. Nick Robinson, you know, has been a lot of stops here for a while. You know, he was an assistant coach at Seattle the past couple of seasons. He was also the head coach at Southern Utah before that. And so, you know, he's obviously been around there and been in Utah for a little bit. He's also LSU and Stanford, among other things. You know, he played basketball at Stanford and played in the tournament 4 times. You know, and he was a contributor on those teams, obviously. And so I look at that and I say, you know, and of course he's served a mission for the church in Brazil a long time ago now. So I look at the staff and I'm pretty excited about who he brought in. I think, you know, all of them have good college experience. All of them have proven themselves at some point or level in the past. I think he's got a good mix there. Do we have the right people in there to go after, you know, to go after defensively and do some of the things I think we need to do? I don't know yet. You know, like I said before, there's not as much. Utah Valley wasn't a extreme defensive team, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Speaking of Pope, there were a couple questions that came in too late a few weeks ago, but they're still relevant. Gary Payne asked, "No idea if it translates to win or not, but I like the increased energy level with Coach Pope. Think that makes a difference with players and with fans?" I think the energy level always makes a difference with fans. Of course, you end up having to win in the end. And with players, I think it depends. I think too much of it can lead to people checking out, but I think mostly it's a good thing. And I think one of the criticisms of Dave Rose over at least the past few seasons was seemed to be a lack of energy level. And M. Shane McDougall, that's at McDougall Shane on Twitter, says, "Who's got more energy, Mark Pope or Bobcat Goldthwait?" Well, the 80s called Shane, and they'd like their reference back. I wonder how many listeners know who Bobcat Goldthwait is. I'm not saying his name right. I would say Pope. I mean, judging by that initial press conference, guy was like the Energizer Bunny, another aged reference. But I don't know. His energy level is interesting. It's similar to, you know, Mendenhall was, you know, had that big first press conference where he quoted scriptures or whatever, and seemed, quite frankly, ends up being maybe a little out of character for him as he was more reserved as time went on. Though he got comfortable with the guys at like BYU Sports Nation and stuff. And Satake comes in as like, you know, gregarious, loves the press, all that stuff right off the get-go, right? And I think we're seeing that a little bit with Pope. He's got a very different style than Dave Rose, and that's cool. I think that's It's sometimes good in these transitions to have a different style than you had before. So our final shout today comes from Eric at Eric or Eric on Twitter. He says, no, actually, he says, how on the scale of 1 to 10, how badly does the honor code office need to be reformed? What would be your suggestions to curtail the abuses of the honor code office, and what responsibility do we as Cougars have?" Fans have to push for reform. Matt and I think we'll tackle this on a different episode. I did want to ask, did want to answer the last part, Eric, which is Cougar fans have to push for reforms. This is not an athletic thing, okay? Right? Like, it affects athletics, but if there's going to be reform, it's not about sports, right? It's about all the students and everybody that's going there and I've got lots of feelings about this and opinions, but it's not about sports. So to directly answer your question, I don't think fans should be worrying about this at all. As alumni or people that care about the school, then I think, respectfully offering suggestions and things or saying we don't think it's acceptable is fine. But I think as fans, that feels off to me because in the end, there's not going to be an honor code for student athletes and an honor code for everybody else, right? It's going to be one and the same. And then the last one is from Justin Sweeney at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. I can't do the Sweeney thing. No hot NBA playoff takes, Justin says. How does Harden play with such a massive beard? I've always wondered that. It seems like I'd get in the way somehow, but it doesn't seem to bother him. Is Westbrook's post-game shtick most annoying thing ever? Ever? No, but top, 98th percentile, definitely. Is every single call against Jazz players actually the worst call in NBA history? I believe he's calling out all you Jazz fans. I believe that he's doing that. And my experience, Justin, is that's the case with almost all fans. I think the officiating is somehow bad against them. I think NBA officiating, I've talked about this on the show many times, is terrible because the rules are weird and they don't do them consistently. Harden's travel this year is an example of that to me, that that was clearly a travel, but the big guys get away with it all the time. But if you look at hot NBA playoff takes, how about this? He then asks, is Giannis ever going to be stopped? Yes. Six games, Celtics over Bucks. How do you like that? How do you like that? And then other playoff takes, I don't really have any that probably haven't already been covered, but obviously the Jazz are in trouble, and we'll see coming out that I think that Nuggets Spurs series has been more entertaining for me than I thought it would be, and obviously the Warriors have looked like themselves for the most part since getting that losing that terrible game against the Clippers. I think they came back to earth, and I still think the Warriors, boring take, but I still think the Warriors win the whole thing. So and all that, but maybe Giannis comes to end right now. That could be my green colored Celtic fan glasses, though, Justin. That may not actually be very good analysis, but I did like the way the Celtics played in that opening series against the Pacers. I think, I don't believe in that whole turn it on thing usually. I think that's a very dangerous way to play basketball, to just wait till the playoffs and then turn it on. But there is a possibility that that's just how Kyrie Irving's built, and the team will go as far as he probably can carry them. Well, anyway, that's all for this week. An abbreviated, perhaps, show with the interview. We'll be back next week, hopefully Matt and I together on one show. We will, we really appreciate you downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time. Go Cougars! See, that one I can do. Dust to dawn.